Welcome back to Officially Unofficial. I'm your host, the former face of junior college baseball, the Fall American, Johnny Junta. And we're here with a special guest, like I referred to earlier, a Big J journalist. She is the national baseball writer at the Washington Post. She went to Yale. Is that good? You tell me. It is my pleasure to welcome Chelsea James to the Officially Unofficial podcast. What's up?
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to get you on. Like I told you earlier, I mean, this is, you want to talk about just a podcast that's diverse. You have a guy that went to JUCO, hit below his body weight. And here you have a Yale grad. So let's go into Yale for a second. I mean, how electric is it? I mean, how hard was it to go to Yale? I mean, was it just impossible, like the academics and all that?
It's funny. The first thing that comes to mind when you said that is I too hit below my body weight in college. So
there it is.
It's relatable. No, it wasn't. I think it's like people always say it's harder to get in than it is to kind of get out of there. And I think there's definitely a level of pressure once you're there, but it's not like, I don't know. I think getting in is a lot harder and it's a good experience, but it's not like you're there and reading things in different languages that you don't know. I mean,
all right. I mean, I don't even want to know how hard it probably would be for me there, but I mean, how would you kind of classify yourself? Because I talk about Big J on a scale of one to, like, let's just say Ken Rosenthal, where would you kind of rank yourself on the Big J scale? Like, we'll put five at like Jeff Passan, or I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but where would you kind of rank yourself on the Big J scale?
Both of them are way ahead of me for sure. So I'm comfortable at like a solid three and
okay.
And a work in progress. That's how I put it.
I mean, like I said, I mean, I like to get a lot of big time prospects on the pod. And yeah. I would definitely say that you're a big prospect for the Big J game. I mean, what's what I'm going to do? Every like 4 months, I'm just going to rank your Big J scale. I'm going to like put it on like a 20 to an 80 scale like they do in the big leagues on prospects. Because like, I mean, you have 50,000 Twitter followers almost. So that's a pretty big accomplishment. How unbelievable is it for you when you make a tweet and it just, your phone just explodes? Do you turn your notifications off? Like the people need to know.
Oh yeah, for sure. I turn them off. I'm terrified of Twitter. I'm terrified of Twitter. Every time I tweet, I'm like, oh God, please don't be an idiot. So yeah, no, I definitely turn my notifications off. I like, sometimes I'll have them on like people that follow me. So I'm like, at least I know the people calling me stupid, but yeah, I try not to like think about how many people see it because then I lose it.
Okay. And at what point is the Officially Unofficial pod going to be like on that list? Because obviously, I mean, we're growing podcast here. So we got to crack the Chelsea list. Sure. Is that going to happen soon?
Oh yeah, for sure. There's no doubt.
I respect that. I mean, I'm just waiting. Like I have a list of accomplishments. One of the accomplishments is you just quoting something a big leaguer said on the podcast in one of your articles. That's when I kind of realized like, holy shit, this JUCO guy from Toronto finally made it. So that's something I'm gonna tick off here. Maybe when Musgrove comes back on or something like that. But let's go into the season. I mean, this season has been bananas to me. I've been losing an uncomfortable amount of money. Humble brag, whatever. But it's just crazy to me. I'll start. I mean, the biggest thing that's a surprise to me is how good the Kansas City Royals are. I mean, I can't even believe they're in first place in their division. But obviously, the cream's gonna rise to the top there with the Chicago White Sox. But what is your kind of impression on the Kansas City Royals, who are all of a sudden a wagon?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I thought when Benintendi went there and Michael A. Taylor, who I know, you know, really well from all his years at the Nats, like both of those guys seemed like much bigger pickups than they were, you know, heralded as. But yeah, you don't look at that team. I mean, Santana, it was just like another like decent pickup. And then all of a sudden you look up and you're like, you know what, they're not that bad. And they kind of are just plugging holes and doing what they need to do. And it's like a very Dayton Moore team, I think, in that he's a little bit old school. He's not trying to stockpile like utility infielders and throw everyone all around the place. He's just kind of getting people who can play the positions they need to play and do it pretty well. And in the AL Central right now, I feel like it's working. I mean, like you said, you think the White Sox are going to be fine, but like, who knows? It's pretty crazy. The Royals are not a joke.
Yeah. And also going into that Royals bullpen, I mean, that Stomont guy is a freak of nature. Every time he's in the game, I just don't even bother watching. It's going to be a 303 down. He just throws like 99 paint every single batter. He's a freak of nature to watch. And that Royals team, honestly, they might be a surprise there in that division. I know we're saying this with them in first place, but they're one team to me that I'm like, holy shit, I can't even believe. And Benintendi's not even hitting in top five in the order, I think. I think he was hitting lower last time I watched them. They're a good team, man. And the Twins are going to start to look good, I think. But that division is going to be scary.
Yeah, I think I thought it was going to be, you know, White Sox or bust kind of, and that was a total mystery. I think the Royals, the thing about the Royals too is it's not like they've never done this before. Like, they have been an under the radar team that all of a sudden looks way bigger than the sum of their parts. And like, a lot of the same people are still there who put that original run together. So I have sort of probably outsized confidence that maybe they can sneak up on people like even sooner than maybe they thought.
Yeah. And this is a question just for me. Is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. the best hitter in the world? Because in my opinion, he's just the best hitter I've ever seen in my life. I'm at a loss of words watching what this guy's doing. And it's incredible. And I tweeted yesterday, when Vladdy Guerrero Jr. hit three nukes, 120 women got impregnated in Toronto, because this guy is a dog. I can't stop watching this guy hit. Do you think he's the best hitter right now in baseball just with the numbers he's putting up? Because it's insane to watch.
He's up there. I mean, I like always lean Trout just because it's safe. But yeah, I mean, it's been unbelievable what he did last night. I mean, it's Max Scherzer. I mean, he gives up bombs, but it's still Scherzer. It's no joke, you know, and it's unbelievable. I mean, every time I watch the Blue Jays, I just look at Vladdy and Bo Bichette and just think like, these guys are going to be on t-shirts for the next like 15 years. They should have a podcast. They should have a buddy comedy. Like, I just love it. And it's a lot of fun to watch. And it's unbelievable. I mean, who knew? Like, if you could lose like 40 pounds or whatever he lost and just start hitting bombs, I mean, I don't know. It's not that automatic. He's just that good, you know?
One thing about him that's really surprising me is like how he's using all like the whole field. Like, last year he's like kind of pull happy. And even if you look at yesterday against Scherzer, he hit a bomb to left field, a bomb to center, and a bomb to right. It's literally like, it's just showing about the progression. And obviously with the Toronto media, when he was struggling his first year or first 2 years here, they were like, when's the real Vladdy going to show up? Well, it takes time. And now look at him. Now he's legitimately insane to watch. Every at-bat is must watch. Get out of your kitchen, stand in front of the TV, because this guy's going to do something special. So I'm excited for this Blue Jays team. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased, and it breaks my heart I can't see this shit live. So it's crazy to me. I mean, what was your thought process before the year going into this Blue Jays team, especially with the addition of George Springer?
Yeah, I definitely thought that they were going to be more than relevant in the AL East. I thought they and the Yankees, I thought the Rays would hang in there, but I thought the Blue Jays would kind of jump to the level of being super competitive, even with the Yankees. And, you know, I thought the Red Sox would be worse than they have been. So I think they're there. Like, they just have to stay healthy, because that starting rotation doesn't suck. I mean, Robbie Ray is pretty good when he's right. I mean, it looks like Tanner Roark's not going to find his way. He kind of goes through those stretches, but I mean, they've got young pitching coming up. It just feels like they're ready to sort of weather the 162 storm. And I just got a lot of exciting people there. I mean, Bichette, Biggio, Biggio has been a little off, but I mean, it's just like a lot of young names where you look at and you're like, these are like big time names. These are real players, and they are just beginning, you know, to kind of find their way.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I don't know if you're like a Tanner Roark fan, but I cannot watch this guy on the mound anymore. I refer to him as the human pitching machine. I don't know what's going on with that dude, but he was nasty in Washington, wasn't he? He was pretty good in Washington. I just don't know why the Jays keep throwing him in there. Why do you think that's the case, that the Jays are throwing him in there? Do you think that it's because of a lack of depth with the injuries, or is it just like they're trying to get him going? Like, I'm confused with the fact that why they keep putting this guy in the games.
Yeah, I think it might be a combination of both. You know, I know in DC, he would go through stretches where he looked awesome and then he would just be terrible. And I think like almost every time he was terrible, he was tipping pitches. And so that could be part of it, you know, like a new league finally kind of noticed his stuff, but he also just is prone to these kind of stretches and then he comes out of them. So like in DC, he would be awful and unwatchable and throw a ton of pitches, you know, day in and day out. And then like for a month or two, he'd just be unhittable. So I mean, maybe they're banking on that, but he definitely has a long history of like tipping pitches and getting into trouble and then, you know, getting out of whack because of it. So I don't know if that's a play. I haven't watched him closely enough because it's kind of hard to watch right now.
I respect that, but in your bio, you actually have you got booed at Turner Field. Let's go into that. I mean, what was the thought? What happened there?
Yeah, I really liked Turner Field actually, but a foul ball came up into the press box and I grabbed it. I wanted to throw it to a fan, and like the normal routine there would be to like look below you and drop the ball to your kid. But I saw these kids like up my left in the stands, and I was like, I am a former, you know, decent softball player. I should probably be able to make that throw. And I just airmailed it. I just like threw it over these kids' heads. So it looked like I was trolling them, and I got booed, and it was like super deserved. It's like one of the proudest moments of my life. But I definitely learned a lesson to like stay within myself that day. So I thought I could make the play and I just couldn't.
What's the Big J press call, press box like there at Turner Field? I heard it's pretty good. I heard it used to be pretty good. I mean, so, okay, actually, no, this, we'll change this question. Name your top five favorite press boxes, like with the best food, the best atmosphere, the best stuff going on here. Like, what's the top five for you stadium wise?
Yeah, I really like San Francisco, even though it's always cold, because it's, I think it's, if not the lowest press box in the majors, it is right there with Camden Yards. So you can actually see pitch movement, whereas like at Nats Park, you're so high up, you can't see anything. So that's a good one. I really like Wrigley Field because it's cramped and old and very Wrigley Field-esque, and you have to like march through the people to get down to the clubhouse. And it's just like a real authentic experience where there's like a 90% chance you're going to appear on you at some point. But other than that, I mean, they're all pretty good as long as you're not quite as high up as like Pittsburgh and Nats Park and stuff like that. I mean, I have no qualms with many of them. I think the food people will tell you like in Philly is really good. But you know, all that's a little different now with COVID. So I just can't wait for that part to get back to normal for sure.
What is the COVID protocols like? I mean, what are you guys doing right now? I'm assuming you're allowed at the ballpark, but are you allowed to do like these in-person interviews in the clubhouse, or is it everything still through Zoom and all that?
Yeah, everything's still through Zoom, which is pretty tough. Not to complain about it or anything, but it's like you can't stand on the field in batting practice and talk to anyone. You can't go in the clubhouse and talk to anyone, and you sort of have to talk to everyone when everyone else is talking to them. So there's no like secrets. It's kind of weird, and it sort of defeats the purpose of like being there in person. I think a lot of people aren't, because frankly, a lot of times you can get a better view of the game itself on TV, and you can, you know, have a lot of feeds up and stuff like that. Whereas if you're at the park, you know, the only advantage you have is that you happen to be there if something crazy happens, but you're still in the same press conferences after as people who weren't there. So it's a little bit weird, and I'm really looking forward to that becoming more normal, because it kind of changes the experience a lot.
Well, I'm assuming it's going to become normal, because I did see your you retweeted or tweeted that in Atlanta they're going to have 100% capacity at Camden Yards. They're going to have 100%, I believe, also. So do you think in the next like couple of weeks you're going to be at the field like watching BP in the press box and all that kind of stuff now?
Yeah, I think a lot more places are going to kind of let you. We've mostly been able to watch BP from the press box, but I do expect like in a few months, probably not as soon as May or whatever, that they'll start to open things back up. I think once everyone's vaccinated, there's really no good reason to keep reporters out of the clubhouse. Yeah. They might not want us in there and might try to do that, which is fine. But I think it'll get back to normal before the end of this year. That seems to be the expectation.
Have you had a moment in your career like such as when Bryce Harper told that reporter that's a clown question, bro? Have you had a moment like that in your career where a guy was kind of pissed off at a question you asked, or like a clickbait moment where it's like, this is going to break the internet when someone posts this?
I think I have. I remember vaguely that Jason Wirth one time, who I really like and think is hilarious, told all the reporters that like the first person to ask a question that night was going to get like wrecked. He was just like in that mood, and I didn't hear him say that, so I just went for it and just got crushed. I think it was like some career home run milestone he hit that you like have to kind of ask about, and no one else was asking questions because they all knew, and I was like, fine, I'll start. And I'm pretty sure it was on camera, but nobody like posted it. I didn't get that destroyed, which is good. I definitely pick my spots with questions for that exact reason. Like if there's a stupid question that has to be asked, I'm going to try not to be the one to ask it. It's just like, I think a pro thing I've learned over the years. But yeah, I've definitely had also like off camera and one-on-one situations, people just like absolutely snap at me. Bryce has done it. And like, you kind of get it, because often you're asking them about things that they're doing poorly and you're not trying to be a jerk, but like, they don't want to talk about it. You don't really want to talk about it. So you just kind of like grit your teeth and say, all right, let's just get through this. And everything's usually fine within a few days.
Yeah, there. I mean, especially here in the Toronto sports media, there's a couple guys like Steve Simmons, where athletes, I don't know if you know who Steve Simmons is, but where athletes like legitimately cannot stand talking to this guy. But I couldn't imagine what it's like to have Bryce Harper mad at you in the middle of an interview. Like, how awkward is that shit? Like, is he just like giving you one word answers and trying to end the interview as fast as possible?
Yeah, for sure. And like, it's awkward, but it's not unexpected. Often, like, if you have to ask a guy who's been having trouble or who made a stupid play last night, I think we were asked, he did something like, you know, hit into a double play and just walked off the field instead of running, you know, and it's not like you think he's a horrible person, but you just want to be like, are you hurt? Are you good? And he didn't like it. And so he got kind of mad and he was like, who's even making this a big deal? Like, you're going to make it a big deal by asking. And like, to some extent, I understand that. So it's awkward, but like, again, the next day you're just like, you know, you say hi and you move on, which I really like about baseball players. They have very, it's like super cliched, but they sort of have to have short memories and they fight among each other all the time. And it's just kind of goes away the next day.
What was like the best, what was the best moment that you've seen live so far in your career? Like just that, like that moment where you look back at and you still get chills.
You know, it's, maybe I'm just thinking about Bryce, but I think when he won the home run derby in DC, that was really, really cool. Cause he had been just like crushed with pressure and questions about his contract. And then like actually looked like, you know, younger, happy, frivolous Bryce again, which was great. I think a lot of Scherzer starts for me have been pretty special. You know, he had a stretch, I think my first year covering the team, his first year with the team, where he like almost threw three no-hitters in a row. There was like a bloop that broke up one. And, you know, it was just like a crazy stretch. So those were really cool because Max is a lot of fun after those kind of games. He's, you know, got a few beers in him by the time he meets the media. And he's just like got this crazy look in his eyes, like he's gonna say whatever you want, you know, ask him anything. But I think like the World Series when the Nats finally made it was really, really cool because they'd been so close so many times and it just felt like it was never gonna happen. So getting to go kind of just watch that and watch them somehow win that was just like, I mean, I'll never forget that for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just the Nationals for me. When I think of the Nationals, I just think of like, I don't know why, but I just think of Trey Turner, especially with what he did yesterday to my Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, this guy, do you think that he has like the potential to be like a massive, like $200-300 million area contract player at some point? Because he is such a joy to watch on the field. Like even yesterday, I don't know what it is about his swing, but it just looks so pretty and he's so fast. It's incredible to watch from the outside.
Yeah, I definitely do think he's going to, you know, he's put up a lot of big numbers already, as you mentioned, helped by your Blue Jays. But I think he, you know, is in that realm, especially when you look at stats. Because I remember when Lindor signed, we were kind of looking at numbers from the last couple of years. And it's like, not that far off. He's just not as flashy. But the thing about him is, and this isn't to say that, like, other players aren't smart. Like, Lindor is obviously a huge leader for the Mets and, you know, really knows what he's talking about. But Trey is just one of those guys, you know, knows baseball and knows how to adjust. So like as he gets older and his speed is maybe a little bit less and, you know, certain tools change, like he's a guy that's going to learn how to deal with that. And I think that's what, if I'm like in a front office, which for many reasons I shouldn't be, I look at that and say, you know, this guy is probably going to figure out how to be relevant for a really long time. And he's just got really good baseball instincts. So yeah, I think he should be in that range, and his numbers I think this year, especially in last year, are going to show that he belongs there.
And I just read this, actually, I believe George Springer will be in the lineup tonight for the Toronto Blue Jays. Ooh. So this is dropping on Monday, so a little bit of a future hint, George Springer will be in the lineup today for the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, I'm excited for it. And by the way, you probably don't know this, but I was forced to piss my pants because George Springer signed with the Blue Jays. I tweeted that if George Springer signed with the Toronto Blue Jays, I'd have to piss my pants, and I did it. Credit to me for being a man of integrity. But like this signing of George Springer, I've never been this excited as a Toronto Blue Jays fan in my life. Maybe when the Jays got David Price at the deadline and they just made that run that I was like, it was must watch TV. But I'm so excited to see what George Springer does. But the thing is, maybe you can talk about this, is Randall Grichuk is playing so well this year. I don't know what the Jays are going to have to do with Randall Grichuk. Like, do you think Randall Grichuk might be trade bait going into like the deadline, stuff like that, because he has such a like a team friendly contract? Or what's the deal there? Because George Springer is obviously the center fielder, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Maybe you like find a way to, you know, you can definitely for a few weeks argue that, you know, Springer's going to have to be careful and not in there every day and all the usual stuff. But yeah, I don't think you can let go of Grichuk. I don't know where he came from. Like he all of a sudden, I mean, he's always been fine. But watching him this year has been a totally different animal. And I don't know. I mean, I think that you just bank on future injuries. You know, I know that's weird, but like, I think you just hope that you can get him in enough to do that. But they've got some positional flexibility, but it's going to be interesting. But I mean, like, that they are where they are right now, which is in a fine place in a division that's like pretty up for grabs because the Yankees can't figure things out. And now to get George Springer back, I think that's going to be awesome for them.
The Yankees are so bad. Like, honestly, I'm not saying this because I hate them. Like, they are so bad. It's honestly incredible to watch. I don't understand what's going on with, like, I know Stanton and Judge hit a nuke yesterday. They both hit nukes, but it's insane to just kind of look at that team and be like, it doesn't make sense why they're bad. I mean, DJ LeMahieu's hitting like 280, I think, which is for him not that good. He's like over a 300 career guy. And then you have Judge and Stanton. Stanton strikes out. He gets booed at his own stadium, which is crazy to me. They're Yankee fans, but it makes sense. But what have you seen from the New York Yankees so far? I can't believe what's going on with that lineup. They just can't hit, obviously not considering yesterday, but they just can't hit lately.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, first of all, Stanton seems to get booed every single time he hits. And I saw him a ton in Miami. And, like, he's the same guy. Like, this is what he does. He's going to miss a lot of pitches and he's going to hit a lot of pitches. And it's just weird. Hit a lot of pitches far, sorry. And it's just weird sort of that there's an expectation of something different there. Like, he's not an in-between guy really for whatever anyone says about him, but they don't feel like a well-constructed roster. And I know they argue like we can rely on the home run ball and pitch well, and, you know, we're going to be fine, but they don't pitch that well. Maybe they will. Their bullpen's really good, but it just seems like they're banking a lot more on potential than the reality of what they have. Like, Gleyber Torres, ton of potential, almost always seems like he's right on the verge of being a really good shortstop, not defensively, but offensively, a really good productive shortstop. And then he's just like never quite there, you know? And Judge, like, really good player, numbers don't lie. It's hurt a lot, like, never gets the chance to totally fulfill that potential. And it's an uncomfortable team to watch for that reason. And it's just like, I don't know. I think maybe they are a team very much unlike the Royals that feel less than the sum of their parts. And I don't know why that is, but it's not pleasant right now. And maybe they'll make me look dumb, but yeah, somehow they get less out of what they have, I think, than they should.
For sure. It's definitely tough to watch, but I mean, that AL East division will always be up for grabs, especially with the Red Sox coming out of nowhere, just being the best team in the AL East for some reason. The Red Sox have really stood out to me due to the fact that, like, they're kind of meshing. Like, when they need guys on, they'll get guys on. When they need like a nuke, JD Martinez will step up to the plate, launch it over the Green Monster. I don't know what's going on with that team, but as a Jays fan, like, it's scary to see how good they're playing. And Nate Eovaldi is, I mean, let's talk about him for a second. He is unbelievable, this dude. His command and just how well he like locates is so unbelievable to me. It's impressive to watch.
Yeah, I was looking at his numbers the other day. I was like, when did Nate, he's so good now. And I know he was like good, you know, upper echelon kind of all-star quality for a long time. But something has clicked there for sure. Like, when you go into the season thinking Nate Eovaldi is going to be like the head, you know, the ace of the Red Sox staff, at least in the short term, that's like not, you're like, okay, that's fine, but that's not Chris Sale. It's not, but like it is right now. That's what, I mean, he's that good. And now you think about pairing him with Sale if he comes back. I mean, that's pretty disgusting. But like you said, like, they seem to make things happen, whereas the Yankees seem to be waiting for things to happen. And it's just like a totally different experience watching those two teams right now. Maybe it'll completely, you know, fizzle out and the Red Sox will be, you know, totally mediocre. But early on, it's been, if I'm a Yankees fan, I'm a little bit nervous, to say the least.
Yeah, and we have Anthony Bass interview dropping on Thursday, and next Thursday, and he mentioned, like, because you mentioned, right, like, a lot of hitters right now, I think the MLB average is at the lowest it's ever been. I could be wrong on that. He mentioned, and maybe you can like back it up on this or just give insight, but he mentioned an incentive-based contracts where hitters have to hit a specific average to get more money, like they do in the NFL with touchdowns. Like, let's just say Tom Brady has to target Antonio Brown more so he gets that incentive pay. Do you think that makes sense? Because he mentioned it because Whit Merrifield tweeted it, I believe, and he said something along those lines. But he mentioned an incentive base where hitters are forced to like not have to worry about like launching home runs as much as they are right now and worried about like putting the ball in play to make it more entertaining.
Yeah, I broke up a little bit, but you know, I think it's really interesting. One of the people I think about a lot when I think about this question is Joey Votto, who basically came out and said, "No, I can be a guy who puts the bat on the ball a lot and, you know, hits the gaps, or I can be a guy who launches, and the Reds need me to be a guy who launches." And there's a give and take there, like that you're giving something up there. And it's interesting to me that we are in a time when like those numbers still pay, and I understand why home runs are so important, and you know, I understand that pitching is ahead of hitting, but for me to see a guy like that, an elite hitter, say, you know, I can be either of these things, but I can't be both, right? It's like it really is telling, I think, of how much an emphasis on power and lift and all of this can take away from the basic contact game. Like there are guys putting bat on the ball all the time. Jake Cronenworth, I mean, you know, Merrifield's pretty good. There's so many of them. And so it's not impossible. It's not like pitchers are so good that you cannot do this. But it's definitely a little bit mindset based. And if you know, make it about money, maybe that helps. I don't know if it overcomes like team need, team approach though. You know, I think there are a lot of teams that want to slug, and the Yankees are certainly one of them. It hasn't worked out, but yeah, it's really interesting. I do think that like the conversations about, you know, three true outcomes and all these things need to include a little bit of like hitter approach, because as good as pitchers are, they are possible to hit. And you know, we know why we're seeing high fastballs. These guys want to look, I mean, it all kind of goes together. And if you emphasize putting bat on the ball, you know, things probably change a little bit. So I don't know. It's super interesting, but that contract idea is really fascinating.
Well, he mentioned that because, especially him being like a closer for the Marlins, he even said, he's like, when I'm seeing guys at the plate now, I'm just trying to get a fastball up.
Yep.
So they have to, because they're swinging up on it. It's very hard to elevate that. That's like one thing that I think has changed, especially from like back at like when I was younger, you used to see guys like with average praise more. And if you were like a guy, let's just say like, I don't even know, like what's this, like a Stanton. If you had a low average and a lot of home runs, you weren't really praised as much as you are now. So it is crazy to me, like just that having like an incentive-based thing where let's just say Stanton has to hit at least 270 to get like a certain amount of money in a contract or something like that. I think that'd make the game substantially better, but I don't agree with the moving back of the mounds. Like what about you?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like really curious to see how it goes. And one argument that was made to me that I don't know if I buy, but I like hadn't heard, was that somebody did a study and like the standard deviation of where catchers set up is like a solid 6 inches or so, or something like that. So like some pitchers are throwing further than they think they are right now. Does that make it like okay to move mound back? Probably not. But I'm just interested because I do wonder like if there are numbers on, you know, catchers that set back farther and stuff. But yeah, it seems like too much. It seems like it should be something you can correct. Like if no one was making contact and no one was hitting well, then you'd think, okay, like this is too much. But if that's not the case, like people that are trying to hit home runs and, you know, swing up at a ball, which we've never, like no baseball coach has ever said that was a way to hit for high average, are not hitting for high average. Like that makes sense. And so, you know, the entire style of pitching has changed. Like you said, you know, a guy like Derek Jeter who's going to swing down on the ball and let those balls go up, I mean, he's probably going to be fine in this game too. So I don't know. It's really interesting, but I don't think the mound moving back gets to the major league level, but I am like really curious to see how it plays out, what it changes, if anything. It might make things, you know, you might have like 100 more walks from, you know, I don't even know
Yeah.
walks. It's just like hard to know.
And I could be wrong on this, but I mentioned this in the Anthony Bass thing. If you move a mound back a foot, wouldn't that mean there'd be more break on the ball to be harder to hit? Like a guy like front of the show, Tyler Glass now, his pitches break already at just an idiotic amount. If you move him back a foot, wouldn't his pitches have way more break because it has an extra inch to move, or am I wrong on that?
No, I think you're totally right. And then presumably, right, that it hits the plate when it's breaking. Like it's going to be harder to keep it on the plate. There's like a few people that have argued that the hitters have more time to react to it and track it, which might mean they let it go more. Maybe they that like I don't know. I think it feels like a little bit of an overthought change that I have heard, you know, pretty credibly as like a Theo Epstein brainchild of like let's just try. And you know, I'm glad they're trying it in the Atlantic League, but I don't know. It's hard to imagine that being the answer because I just can't picture major league starters being like, sure, let's do it, you know?
Yeah. No, for sure. And then can you explain this to me, actually, because I saw you tweet about this yesterday. Obviously, I'm not the brightest, so I don't understand it. The Pioneer League. Explain to me what they're doing with this extra inning stuff. And because I'll tell you what I think. This is what I think it is. I think it's like a five-pitch home run derby between two guys at the end of a game, which is electric to me. I don't know if I like it in major leagues, but that is a dynamite if that's what it is.
That's what I think it is. Yeah, I was having this conversation with someone yesterday, too, like, do pitchers pitch? Do BP pitchers pitch? I think it's BP pitchers is my understanding, like five pitches and hit as many as you can, which I think is awesome. Like, I don't know.
That's electric.
I just like can't, you don't do it in the postseason probably, but like in the regular season, how much cooler is a tie game in the ninth when you know you're going to see Fernando Tatis Jr. hit against, you know, Cody Bellinger for like, I think that's awesome. I'm not like a super traditionalist. I like don't really buy any of the like, we've always done it this way stuff, but like, I don't know. The runner on second thing is weird. It seems to result in a lot of blowouts anecdotally and kind of strange anticlimactic finishes. So I don't know. I mean, why not? I just like don't see a good argument against, you know, a shootout or whatever you want to, I mean, other sports do it. So it's not like a totally random idea to have like a knockout home run derby and get the game over with and save some pitchers.
And honestly, that'd be electric. And then you could like add a stat on like game winning home run derbies. Like, what is Vladdy's record in the extra inning home run derby? Like, is he 6-1? Because you have that in hockey, right? You have the shootout, like the guy's 30% on the shootout. Right. Like, that's that. I think it'd be electric. I honestly don't know if like relief pitchers would enjoy it, because obviously that kind of takes away from where they're good at, is like going into like late innings in the games and putting up zeros. But I still think it'd just be absolutely electric to see, like, let's just say Vladdy versus like Juan Soto,
yeah,
like tonight, for instance. Like, I feel like that'd be electric, but I'm not really sure. I don't really know where it goes, but I mean, a lot of people are saying the game of baseball is not growing, but I believe it's at its highest viewership so far ever, right? So it just don't fix what's not broken, right? I guess, ideally, right? I mean, they're buzzing right now. Everyone's watching baseball. Even people that, like in Canada here, that I would never have thought are watching baseball are watching baseball. So it's growing a pretty good amount, right?
I think it is. I mean, those numbers, the viewership numbers are really, you know, telling. I think I can't yet figure out like how the pandemic and not being able to go to games in person affects those, but it doesn't feel like it would be enough to skew them, you know, to make for up for that difference. But yeah, I it seems like there's a lot of excitement around it. And I think like that is, you know, guys like Tatis and, you know, Otani, and it like matters, you know, there's fun young stars. I'm obsessed with Jazz Chisholm and Miami, like guys like that make a difference. And Vladdy, obviously. So I think, yeah, it does seem like it's going in the right direction. But one thought I just had about the home run derby thing is how much like the best batting practice pitcher in baseball's salary would jump. Like everyone would want that guy. And then like he can't choke in the night. I think that dynamic would be incredible. For that reason alone, I've now decided I hope it happens.
And you know how many middle-aged men like sitting on their couch are going to be like, man, this BP pitcher sucks. Like my BP is way better than this. Like you're going to be hearing a ton of these like middle-aged men just like drinking Busch Lights on their couch, telling their kids like, son, my BP is better than this. No, like my BP, I should be there. I should be throwing to Vladdy. Like you're right. I didn't even think about that. It's going to be, I hope ESPN and like MLB Network starts like tracking the contracts of these BP pitchers.
Yeah.
Like just like, for instance, like, let's just say me, Johnny Junta signs a 5-year, $10 million deal with the Blue Jays to throw BP. Like that would be electric.
Yes. There's no doubt. I mean, I remember Bryce's BP guy, Ali Mudami, who was with the Nats, who went to the Angels this year. And like in Nats world, you know, it was just like, oh my God, they lost Ali. Like, where's he, you know, if we don't have him anymore. And I can't imagine what it would be like if he, you know, was in that situation. So yeah, it'd be super cool. And like some of them throw from really close, some of the older BP throwers, like would there be a limit? Could you throw from like a couple feet away? Like, I don't know. It'd be awesome.
I'm all in. Yeah. And let's go into the draft for a second. Well, this is like the third, second, last thing I want to talk about. The draft. I am clear cut on Jack Leiter being the number one pick. Am I right with that? I think he's overtaken Kumar Rocker. I think Jack Leiter, watching him on Pitching Ninja, he's a walking Pitching Ninja video, by the way. Everything this guy does is on Pitching Ninja, and I back it up. He's electric. But is he a clear-cut number one right now?
I would think so. I mean, we both, as we know, like, there's pretty much nothing baseball people love more than pedigree. And just the name alone, I think, gives him a little bit of an edge as someone who's, like, been exposed to all this. But yeah, I mean, he's unbelievable. And he's not, like, I don't know, he just looks like someone who can pitch with that delivery for a really long time. Like, it's going to be really consistent, repeatable, you know, as we'd say. So I don't know. He looks that way to me. I think so. But it's kind of remarkable to have both those guys in this position. And I guess a lot could still change, you know, by the time we get to June. I just kind of hope they stay healthy, and we have to answer that question when we get there.
I'm an advocate for making the MLB draft be like the NHL draft, where you're actually attending it in person and the people go up on stage and you get like that whole kind of show thing like they do in the NFL as well. I don't understand why the MLB draft is the way it is. Like, I'm so confused on the fact that like the kids are just at home. Like, I feel like it would make a substantially better like difference if, like, let's just say the first 8 to 10 rounds or the first 7 to 8 rounds are like at like a stadium with like a stage, and you have Rob Manfred there. You have like the general managers passing the jerseys to the kid, taking pictures. Like, why is it like the way it is? I'm so confused on this.
Totally. I mean, I remember like quote unquote watching the MLB draft on my computer when it was like, this team has just called into the conference call and made their pick. And like, you know, it's so weird. I totally agree. And I think like, this is totally anecdotal. I have no numbers to back it up, but it feels like college baseball has sort of risen in prominence over the years. There's just like more interest, more coverage. And so it's not like these guys are unknown. I mean, everyone knows who Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker are, you know, you're not surprised by these names. There's kids you follow. So I think you could do it. And I think sometimes you have to like put the, I don't know if this is the right phrase, but like the carrot before the horse, like blow it up and then see if people come to expect that. Like, you know, if it's not as exciting as the NFL or NBA draft, that's fine. But like, just try it. Just see what happens. You know, if you want to be on that level, make it a spectacle. And because it is, I mean, it's one of the most fascinating drafts there is. You never know where you're going to get next star. And to me, like, it's unpredictable. You know, it's just kind of a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I'm all in for it. I think it would just be a good aesthetic just to kind of see how these kids experience their draft day on like a national stage, like where the GM is there like greeting the kid, you see the kid like hug his parents, walk down like the stairs. I feel like that's what I love about the NHL draft, because you actually physically, when Connor McDavid got drafted, you physically saw Connor McDavid walk down the stairs and like greet the GMs and the coaches and all those kind of guys. So I feel like that's just a good visual just from a fan perspective to like put two and two together, like this is him on draft day and this is him now. I just think it's a great thing for the game of baseball.
Yeah, no, definitely. And as I think about it, I wonder if part of the hesitance is like how, you know, at the same time that you can find stars in any round, it does seem like the journey from draft day to, you know, big league mound or whatever is a little bit longer in baseball than it is in other places. So it's not like you're going to see that guy on the court in the next week. But maybe that's all the more reason to make him visible so that people pay attention in the minors, so that people are kind of familiar when they get there. So yeah, I mean, I'd be all for it, but I'm sort of all for max baseball coverage at all times anyway.
For sure. And this is the second last thing. Who's the most impressive like player you've seen right now in the show? Like you mentioned, Jazz Chisholm, he's the only guy that has a hit off of Corbin Burnes and Jacob deGrom. So, I mean, that's one guy to me that I'm like, this guy's electric.
Yeah, he's a ton of fun and kind of came out of nowhere for me. Like, I mean, I knew, you know, the name and kind of that he was around and close, but like for him to kind of pop up the way he has with so much personality and energy, it's like kind of a great thing in my mind. I mean, I am unable to not watch Shohei Ohtani. I think he's unbelievable. I don't know if he's like the best at everything, but he's so close to being the best at most things that it's like good enough for me. But like, when he's healthy, which he is not, I still am perpetually awed by Juan Soto. I think he's a little less, he's not quite as like high energy as Vlad Guerrero Jr. And not quite as like, I don't know, he's just a little bit kind of more chill than some of those guys, but not much. And he's just been so good from moment one. Like, that guy doesn't struggle. He just, if he's there, he's good and he knows who he is. And he loves baseball. And it's just, you know, from the first time I saw him was like in, I think low or high A maybe. And he hit a ball, like no joke, over trees that were behind the right field fence. It was just like one of those things that any human being who was in those stands, even if you didn't know about baseball, knew that that was different. And like, he was in the majors a few months later. So it's, I think he's the one I think like I continue to be awed by, but I will watch Shohei Ohtani or, you know, every single at bat if I can.
For sure. Yeah. It's just the game of baseball is in such a good spot, but I would say like right now, like the most entertaining guy is clearly like Fernando Tatis by like head and shoulders over people. What are your thoughts? I mean, especially as a baseball writer, I mean, what are your thoughts on like Trevor Bauer? Are you a big fan of like what he's doing with like social media, or do you think it's sometimes too much at times? Like what's your thought process on Trevor Bauer?
I think he's fascinating. And I don't know if that's a compliment, but for me, he is just interesting. He's very like me in a sport that is not super accepting of that. And like, yeah, you can be me and that you celebrate and throw a bat and sort of, you know, have endorsements, but he's kind of like trying to be a brand. And it's just like not something that usually goes over well in clubhouses or stuff. So I'm sort of more fascinated by the personal dynamics. Like is the Dodgers clubhouse really going to absorb him, you know, in a meaningful way, or is that going to fall apart? I don't know, but he definitely starts a lot of conversations, and baseball people love conversations about things they hadn't been talking about. So from that perspective, he's super interesting, but yeah, I'm kind of like unsure of what I think of him other than he's interesting.
Yeah, he's just an interesting character. He is a very interesting character. And just thinking about it from like a guy that's been in like, that's obviously been in clubhouses, like with not in the big league clubhouses, but I just couldn't imagine the dynamic of having a teammate just have a camera with him wherever he goes, like in the clubhouse. Like I'd feel like kind of awkward. Like that's like a safe space. No, I don't know. I just that dynamic for me, it would just, I don't know if I'm all in on that, just being a teammate of a guy with a camera everywhere he goes, like when we're warming up on the field, all that kind of stuff. But I could be wrong on that. Some of his teammates might enjoy it, but I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with it.
Yeah, my first reaction is that I have a hard time picturing teammates who will think it's a positive, right? There may be guys who don't care and for whom it's irrelevant to their day-to-day.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone's sitting there in a major league clubhouse thinking, yeah, this is how I want to do things. There are a lot of things that happen in major league clubhouses that like, it's not like clubhouse culture is something to be emulated all the time. So I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I do think within that context, there are probably a lot of people who are like, this is not something I would like to do.
And I'll ask you this, because what are the chances of this show having a rookie of the year on the show? And I'll give you an example. Zach McKinstry is a friend of the show. Jonathan India is a friend of the show.
Wow.
What are the chances of these two guys being rookie of the year candidates? Because Jonathan India, I believe he has a pretty good amount of RBIs. He's really good in the field. And Zach McKinstry is just becoming the face of the Dodgers now. I mean, I had this guy on in before the season, he had like 8,000 followers. Now he has like 24,000. Like he's just blowing up Dodger world right now. So what are the chances of a friend of the show becoming a rookie of the year in the National League?
I think kind of high. I mean, India's pretty incredible. And like, I understood it watching the Reds, like he wasn't a lock to make the opening day roster, but this kind of played them into moving Suarez and all this stuff. So like that says something. And I think they're going to be decent all year. So like, he's going to be around. And I think McKinstry, man, like he just hits. Like I have no analysis other than that guy just hits. And he is going to get a lot of playing time. I feel like they're always moving guys around. People are always going to be hurt on that roster. Like, yeah, he could definitely, I'm trying to think who else is in that conversation early, but I mean, he's definitely there. And he's just like, I don't know. McKinstry strikes me as someone who's going to be around for a long time.
Oh, and the craziest thing about him is like, he was the 1,001 pick. Like he was so late in that draft, which is crazy to me. And then here's a follow-up one. What are the chances of officially an official friend of the show, Jesse Winker, winning the MVP award? I mean, this guy yesterday, first pitch against Walker Buehler, launches it over the right field. I mean, this guy, I believe he's hitting 390, and he's just unbelievable right now. I think he had a double and a nuke yesterday. So I would say, what are your what would you think about the chances of a friend of the show, Jesse Winker, winning the MVP this year?
I won't rule it out. I feel like it might not happen, but that whole team though, like, I don't know. I mean, they're good. You look at them on paper, you're like, yeah, that's a decent lineup, but they just seem to be, they're good. I mean, everybody in that lineup is just solid, and he is obviously one of them. But yeah, I mean, I like watching the Reds, which is something I haven't said many times in my life. And I think they're just like, they've got a lot of really good hitters with kind of fun personalities, and they're going to be a lot of fun to watch for sure. He kind of cracks me up. I've seen some of his kind of interviews and stuff, and I don't know him personally, but he just seems like kind of a good good personality, good kind of laid back baseball vibes that you just absolutely need.
Yeah, he's good for the game. I mean, he's, as you can see, I mean, I ride for the guest on the show. Every time a guest has success, I'm tweeting about it. Another guy that's actually that came on the show that's actually kind of taken the world by storm is a good friend, Jordan Luplo. I don't know what your thought process on Luplo is, but I mean, this guy's launching baseballs. He had a walk-off 2 days ago. He's like, he just looks good at the plate. Everyone says he can't hit righties. He has a higher average this year against righties. So he's a guy that's really, really emphasized hitting righties and kind of growing himself in the game. And I'm really impressed with what I'm seeing out of Luplo.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, now that you mentioned it, that it's a, there's a lot of like guys kind of bursting onto the scene early that you look at and you feel like they're going to be able to continue it, but you guys should advertise that way, right? Like, here's who was on the show and here's what they're doing. You can, I mean,
I am saying, who knows? I'm saying it's a bump. I'm who saying knows? It's a bump because, yeah, for instance, I mean, Joe Musgrove came on the show in March, throws a no-hitter. I mean, some are calling it, I mean, some are saying thank you, Johnny, for that. So it's right. it's all coming full circle. But anyways, I mean, it was a pleasure to have you on. I mean, 50,000 followers on Twitter, a Yale graduate, is that good? You tell me. It's just a pleasure to have you on and just kind of see how dumb I am compared to some people in the baseball world. It's incredible to see. So I really appreciate you hopping on.
Not so at all. I feel like I have catching up to do. So yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Officially Unofficial. Make sure you guys subscribe and leave a review on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Official Unofficial Pod and on Instagram at Officially Unofficial Pod. Thank you.